September 20, 2022, it's the Watch for Pedro Show. for Pedro show. Happy Tuesday, little makeup show. But not too late, just a few days, because I had sickness. It still hurt like a motherfucker. We started the show off with Buckeye, John Coltrane, and then Rush from Randy Randall. And his, I don't know if it's out already or it's upcoming.
It's out.
It's the magic of those Estonian engineers. Their Skype invention. I got Randy Randall. Where are you talking to me from, Randy?
I'm up here in Sunland, California, just north of Glendale.
Sunland?
Yeah.
Yeah, east part of the valley.
There it is.
Yeah, Tony Dill lived Shadow Hills, not too far.
Yeah.
So much different than the west part of the valley. So, look, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Oh, man. Well, I grew up out in Pomona, or right near Pomona, a little town called Walnut. And I was born in 1981. I had two older brothers. My oldest brother, Sam Randall, born in 68, and he was my musical hero. He skateboarded. He listened to punk rock. So I was just a puppy dog, you know, to him, whatever he had.
So your earliest music memory is your brother listening to punk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Now, in this pad in Walnut, was there musical instruments?
Whew. You know, but Sam had a guitar.
The same brother.
Yeah, same brother.
The other brother will remain unknown.
No, Dave was a surfer. He was a partier and a surfer.
Surfer in music. Fucking Pomona.
Yeah. Yep. No, it was my dad.
Well,
my dad
was a
surfer. We were. Yeah. They all. My dad grew up in Torrance.
Torrance. You know, okay. They actually got beach there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he grew up there and then went to Vietnam, came back, married my mom. You know, my mom had two kids when he married her, and then they had me. Made a little life out there in the Inland Empire.
Your brother would take the fucking California 91 all the way to fucking the beach, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was San O. San Onofre was our spot. We were down there all the time.
Oh, wait. That's way south.
Yeah, we'd go all the way down.
Actually, if you go a little further south, right, there's Camp Pendleton, but then there's Oceanside. Mm-hmm. Oceanside's the big surf town.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Were you at school, were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
No. I did a little bit of acting. You know, I did like the plays, you know, when I was a kid. I had a bit of a ham bone. I liked being up on stage, but I didn't know how to sing. I didn't know what to do with myself.
Can I ask you, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Ooh, that's a great question. I'm going, you know, I'll out myself. You know, I think it must have been something like The Simpsons, Sing the Blues or something. You know what I mean? I've sort of probably been real kid. I'll be real honest. You know, the kid, you know, about fourth grade, about 9 or 10 years old, and probably bought a Simpsons record.
What was the first gig you went and saw?
Ooh, that's a great question. That, because I had these older brothers, I was able to, you know, to kind of under their wing, and they take me, you know, my parents give permission because the brothers are going to watch after me. So I saw, first concert was a Rock for Choice big benefit concert at the Palladium with Free Kitten and King Missile, SST, or STP.
I bet you L7. Sensible
Pilots. Was L7 there? Maybe. That might have been it, right? You know, they were always organizing those.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, must have been White Zombie was who I was interested in. I'd caught them and the kind of the groove metal thing that they're doing, monsters and everything.
Randy, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I know you as a guitar player. How did you get on the fucking guitar?
So that was the thing. Yeah, so my brother Sam, you know, I cite him as a big influence in my life. He passed away when I was 12 years old. And I inherited a lot of his records, a lot of his t-shirts, you know, and his guitar. And so kind of not dealing with grief, you know, our family kind of all dealt with it in their own way. Everybody lost somebody different. You know, I lost my hero. My mom lost her son. You know, my brother lost his little brother, you know. And so we all lost somebody different. So we didn't really know how to talk about it. But I got a guitar out of it. So that was me.
Well, let me ask you this.
I kind of equated my guitar. Yeah.
When you still had your brother, Sam, and he was playing guitar, right? How was he? Was he self-taught or did he take lessons?
I think he might have taken a lesson or two, you know, kind of the Mary Had a Little Lamb sort of stuff, and he wasn't going for it, so he was just putting records on and trying to jam along with them.
Well, let me ask you this. Did he let you jump on it and show you shit?
You know, it was touchy. I think I would kind of hang out in the room while he played. You know, I didn't really get to touch it necessarily, which is
okay,
so funny
so
now.
When he,
yeah.
we lost him, and you get the guitar, did you get an amp with it?
Yes. Yeah. Lab series. One of those.
I remember those labs. Combos. You don't like those labs?
I still have it.
I think B.B. King was into those amps.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, you know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lab 5. Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, great. I still have them.
Okay. So you got the guitar. You got the amp. You never really got on it. But now you want to play it in honor of your brother, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what do? Do you take lessons? Do you try to figure out songs off of record? What happens?
Yeah, so it was the time of, guitar player magazines. You go to the grocery store and they'll, sure, have tablature, and so I would do that. I would try to learn some stuff.
I think they had a sister publication called Bass Player Magazine.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
I got on two of the covers.
Those are great.
I would have never imagined that as a teenager.
Right.
But anyway, so. Yeah, in the back of the magazine, they had, little columns, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dudes teaching you shit. Ed Freeland was in the bass player ones. So that's how you learn, from the back of the guitar player.
Yeah, yeah, just doing that. And I would just, and just kind of sit with it. I wasn't too concerned about being great at it at first. So it was a kind of cathartic sort of grief process, too. So I'd just sit with the guitar and just strum one string for a few hours and kind of cry. Yeah. I was having a moment there, It was a way to connect me,
It's okay with what? Let me ask you this. Not after school, like graduation, but after school in the afternoon, did you do the garage band, basement band, bedroom band?
Yep. I got into all of that stuff. Yeah, so we did a little bit in the garage, and then eventually got a Tascam, a 424 Porta Studio, one of those little four tracks.
I got those first jams.
For my birthday.
Were they at your pad? There's probably at the drummer's pad, right?
There was, we met at another buddy who, we were into similar kind of music, and he played bass, and we went over to this drummer's house. He knew this girl who was a drummer, so we'd go over to her house. And, everything kind of sounds like the Batman theme, right? No. Okay, we're going to change it. Now, the next song, do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, but you were trying to write your own stuff.
To play together.
You were trying to write your own stuff, though. That's Head and Shoulders over me and D-Boom when we're trying to copy Blue Oyster Cult and Creedence. Because that's what people did in the 70s. But so you guys were right, even though it sounds a little derivative of Batman, it's still your own stuff. Did this band have a name?
That we called it Chew Toys. Nothing, did only lasted about four practices, but we thought that was a name.
Oh, so you never did a gig?
Never, not with that band. No, I really didn't get a chance to play gigs till I moved out to Hollywood. And I fell in with some friends who were into playing, this kind of music like Power Violence, like the Locust and this kind of real fast, thrashy stuff. I didn't know about that.
But Locust, these guys were real... San Diego, right?
Yeah, the San Diego band.
We lost the drummer, man. Gabe. He was good.
Gabe, oh, God. He was amazing.
What happened to him? He wasn't that old.
I don't know the whole story.
I got to play with him a couple times in some project somebody involved me with, guys from the city. And I remember playing with them in San Diego. Yeah, they used to wear masks too and shit.
Yep. Yeah, and it was just thrash. I didn't understand it, but these guys I fell in with, they said, hey, you want to? I actually jumped on bass. They said, hey, you want to play bass in our band?
Really?
I said, cool. And they taught me, and they started teaching me the songs. So this was like a Squire, P bass.
Sure.
Sort of thing. And it was belonged to the guitar player, and he had spray painted it, or maybe I spray painted it yellow.
Okay.
And the song mostly consisted of just kind of move your fingers up and down on the neck as fast as you can for 30 seconds.
Well, you were talking, you were talking about Two Toys being kind of riff-oriented, like Batman. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of a head start on the bass, right? Not a lot of chords on the bass.
Right, yeah, single notes.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting. So what was this band called?
So this band was called The Count.
And what did The Count go past four pracs?
Yes. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we probably only did three practices and five shows.
Okay. Wow.
You did more gigs than you did practice. That's what I liked about these guys. I was aching to get out of the bedroom. I had two boxes full of four-track cassettes, and I was making myself, but I wanted to get out and play. I didn't care what the music was or what the scene was. I was just anxious to go play live.
These are four tracks, so you're sound on sound, right? A little less.
Yeah, ball. Exactly.
Mary Ford. Okay. Tell me about the first Count gig.
This was at Headline Records on Melrose. It was an in-store. I don't know why. I think there were maybe three or four bands were playing in there.
You're on the yellow Squire. And would you consider the gig a success?
I think so. I think so. It was again, it was kind of cathartic. I think I used music a lot, as, you know, we didn't really have therapists, you know, so much of those in those days. So the music to me was kind of just a way of.
Did you write any of the material, or is it all these other kids?
No, I was joining somebody else's
sure,
kid,
sure, sure.
Somebody else's thing. I was filling in for, I was probably the third or fourth bass player for this band.
Let's play some Randy Randall stuff. I'm going to play Begin.
sitting at this typewriter typewriting. Let me tell you what's real, man. Everything is great. We're all very happy for you.
Wow.
Watford Pedro Show. Started off that chunk of music with Randy Randall with Begin, which was appropriate since we're talking about his beginnings. Mold Owens from Baltimore with Devil's Fullback. XV, Shut Up, I'm Bald. Afternoon Freak. This is a project I did with Danny Franco, Matt Mattel, third one. And it's a trippy one because I wrote all the material. We traded files during the situation. No Put There Instead. And then Isolation during that situation. Yeah, Randy Randall. So, okay. Free practice.
Mike, can I jump in for one second? Great, I wanted to let you know, too. But because of my older brother passing, a lot of his older friends kind of took me on. And they would give me records, you know, because they knew I liked music. And so one of the early tapes I had was Firehose Mr. Machinery Operator. And I didn't have any context for yourself. For Ed. I didn't understand.
That's what the title is. He is the machinery operator.
Oh, I got it. I never understood that. He was the producer. Mr. Machinery Operator.
Yeah, he's the producer, see? And wow. Like wearing his little vice, right? The little pipe in the vice.
Yes.
No one ever got my double meanings. Anyway.
I love that record. This is what I wanted to call it out. There's an early influence. I can't really talk about my influences without citing you.
There's a song on there that Edward wrote that Jay Maskus does a bitchin' bass solo on. Fuzz bass solo. It's called Blaze. Of course, Georgie called it Glaze. Thought I was a donut, tried to glaze me, right? Okay, let's get back. Now, you say the count lasts only 3 pracs and 5 gigs.
Yeah.
Why'd you leave?
The guitar player got grounded and he couldn't practice or play shows anymore. The rest of us were just barely out of high school and the guitar player was still in high school. And I was feeling myself. I was living on my own living with one of my brother's friends and off of Melrose. At that point, going to college, and I just felt like I was, you know, a little too mature to be in a band with somebody whose mom could cancel practice. Yeah. I wasn't feeling it. So I took the drummer aside and I said, "Hey, why don't you and I do something else? Why don't we start something?" And we met this guy. He knew this guy Dean Spunt.
This next project actually has 2 members of the count.
Exactly. Yep. Me and the drummer. We came from the count into this band that we called Wise. With Dean Spunt.
And that he becomes the No Age
singing drummer for No Age, yeah.
But okay, so this band, but this is one you put together. This isn't one you joined, right?
Exactly, right. It was the first time I really said, hey, I kind of took the bull by the reins.
Well, you were also doing Man Alone with the 4-track.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But this is your first ensemble, The Wives. Tell me about the first Wives gig.
First Wives gig, we played at a place called Arts in Action. It was down kind of in the Pico Union area, or no, not in MacArthur Park area. It was like a drop-in center, kind of anarchist, you know, sort of community center. And we turned all the lights off, and we had headlamps on, and kind of did something similar to the count. It was kind of a freak out.
Have you ever heard of the Elks Lodge riot thing with the cops and all that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the neighborhood.
You're right. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
well,
right.
Because MacArthur Park's pretty big, right? And so.
Right. Oh, yeah. But no, I've spent a lot of time in that neighborhood and you know, commuting from school, right? Riding my bike from West Hollywood down into downtown.
And so how'd the gig go? Were you considered a success?
I think so. You know, we felt exhilarated and, you know, we're running on you know, adrenaline and not knowing anything and ignorance, you know, and
that's all right. Tell me about the material.
So that stuff was, we were kind of looking at, you know, touch and go, you know, sort of stuff similar, you know, like some Jesus Lizard type of vibes.
But you're not covering them. You're doing your own thing.
Not covered. No, it was kind of drawing inspiration, I think, from a little bit of that and also from the Providence, Rhode Island scene that was sort of happening with Lightning Bolt and Black Dice.
When I think of Jesus Lizard, I'm always thinking about the birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know about them?
I didn't at that time. I knew Nick Cave a little bit, but I think that's a great parallel.
I got to see him at the Roxy. You know? And they had Tracy Pugh on the bass and Mr. Sims, David Sims.
Yeah.
A little bit. Very good bass. Both guys, very good bass players. So did you do most of the writing or was it collab?
So what we figured out is I would write something with the drummer, and then Dean would write something with the drummer. So Dean and I never really wrote together.
Dean wasn't on? Oh, yeah, because you got the drummer from the count. So what was Dean playing?
Dean was playing bass and guitar. Yeah, he played bass for a little bit. And we would switch off, you know, some songs I'd play bass on, some songs he'd play bass on. And then some songs he'd put the bass down and I would have to play the guitar for both things. You know, I'd try to figure out that whole routine that I ended up, you know, getting more into with the No Age stuff.
And but the wives, yeah. Do the wives morph into No Age?
So that drummer, original drummer from the Count, we kicked him out somewhere on tour for being inappropriate, and you know, we didn't know it was called Me Too, you know, at that time. We just knew this guy fucking sucked.
Abusive, right?
Yeah, exactly. We put him on a Greyhound bus from Austin and said, you know, we would never want to see you again. And then we continued on with another drummer. We found another drummer in Austin. And
you had to learn the shit, right? Like,
yeah, we did one gig in Houston where we just kind of free jazzed it out, just jammed it.
Yeah.
And then we stayed with our friends Deer Hunter in Atlanta the next day.
Ah, great band, great.
We had about, you know, 6 hours of practice in their spot.
Okay. When that drummer leaves,
yeah.
You're a trio now and you're still called the Wives, but does it change?
It does, because then when Dean and I start talking, we realize, wait a second, like, do you even like the song anymore? He's like, well, I just wrote this with the drummer. It was more the drummer's idea. And so once that guy's out of there, we figured, yeah. Like, oh, well, like, why don't – so we eventually – this tour goes, you know, took us across most of America, and then we got into Europe kind of without a plan. You know, we had some shows booked, but we were playing in just very stressful situations. I told Dean, like, why don't we just break up this band live? Like, who cares? The drummer's not even here anymore. You and I don't even like these songs. So let's end this band, and then we can start something new, something fresh where you and I write together, and that's where No Age is born.
Now, does Dean know drums before this?
No. So he had a girlfriend, Jennifer, who was in a band called Nika Nico, and they lost a drummer, and he kind of sat in, you know, just teaching himself how to play it. And so I think he wanted to, it was an extension of that. He wanted to continue learning, so we started No Age with him really just not knowing what he was doing.
That's... You know, but that's the spirit of the movement. You know, that's yeah. I never will think punk as a style. It's more of an attitude. Like, fuck it, I'm gonna learn this.
Yeah.
You know, you know the old joke: white as a dog, lick his balls.
Why?
Because he can.
Exactly. I think we ran on that energy for a long time. Why are we doing this? Because we can.
Can you remember the first No Age song that you guys wrote?
Ooh. I think so. It was on our earliest EPs. I can't think of the name of it right offhand. But I could, yeah. But yeah, no, we had a type of vision where we thought we were kind of mixing the Ramones and My Bloody Valentine, which at the time sounded kind of novel, and no one had really done that. It was, you know, we wanted to do more than that. We also had a love for Squeeze. We sort of discovered them.
The big question from Watt, though, is why is this band a twofer? What about the bass, the poor lonely kick drum? More
room we jammed with our friend Dave Scott Stone, who had played bass in the Melvins and Slug and Unwound a little bit. He was kind of a jack of all trades, sort of sitting in the Brian Eno position, at some points being a noise guy, sometimes being a bass guy. And I think what we found, it had more to do with the personal friendship and politic of it than the sonic sort of character. I think what with Dean and I found that we got along well together as a two piece. And once we had that third element in it, then it becomes factions. You know, it becomes a political situation where, no, me and the drummer are doing, we'd experienced that already. We'd been the three piece.
Okay.
So we found ourselves balancing each other out. Just our two personalities worked.
No, it makes sense.
It got weird. And so we figured,
tell
you,
it's the end of the first hour. September 2022. This is what Peter Show special guest, Randy Randall. Hold tight for hour two. September 2022. It's the second hour of the What for Peter Show. Squat for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Randy Randall with Rest. Then Euphoric Attempts, brand new, Fragments of Yesterday, Emily Robb, live at Friendship Speedwell, Randy Randall with The Cross, fine. Tell me about this Randy Randall record.
Yeah, so this is my second solo record. I conceived of this project as, you know, doing these solo ambient records. I needed something to write about or sort of, you know, or frame these types of experiments on guitar with these really kind of minimal guitar pieces. So the first one I did, I called it Soundfield Volume 1, and it was a soundtrack to the 10 Freeway. I started it in Palm Springs, you know, from a Southern California Inland Empire perspective. That was, you know, the kind of...
Do you know about the I-10, though, you know? Santa Monica to Jacksonville Beach.
Wow, where's Jacksonville Beach?
Florida.
In Florida, wow.
That freeway, it's called the Christopher Columbus Intercontinental Highway because it goes all the way across. There's a little bypass in Orleans at Slidell. You could take I-12, but you could stay on the I-10 the whole way.
Wow.
But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. So
if we could have gone, you know, if we could have done that, we would have. But we're shooting it, you know, we're shooting a film. I basically wanted to make a film so I could make a soundtrack for it. So we started filming stuff in Palm Springs at sunrise. Then we did the suburbs of West Covina and morning time downtown LA where it crosses over down through Hollenbeck Park. And then did the sunset at the beach. And so that was kind of our movement.
So what you're talking about is you made the images first and then you made sound to go to them, or the other way around?
Kind of doing it at the same time. We were shooting it and I would record stuff as we're shooting it and we put it together and kind of, I worked with my good friend Aaron Farley as a filmmaker and, you know, we kind of collaborated on these ideas. So the second one is called Volume.
I don't know the first one. So is it mainly guitar?
It's very similar.
Oh, so there's synthesizers.
It's all guitar. I don't think there's any synthesizers.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep.
Remember the Wizard of Oz, Frank Morgan?
Yeah.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. He was the dude behind the curtain. So I don't know.
Sure.
It's interesting. You use the boxes?
Yeah. So So I used, this kind of this pedal board. It's mostly just delays. With a volume pedal, you know, you put a volume, you take away the attack from the guitar and just leave the resonant swell.
Right.
And you put that into a delayed series of delays if you can, and then you get stereo, you know, panning going on, and it becomes this. It can become, you know, can layer it almost like a church organ, you know, something very kind of.
You ever use an Ebo?
I have. I didn't find it. I didn't really find it for me. I was enjoying these other kinds of.
You know what, Brian Day up in the city. Made me one for bass.
Oh.
And I used it with some stuff by Al Margolis. And just a few months ago. It's the first time ever I tried.
Wow. How was it? What did you think of it?
They're trippy, man. It's a different way of playing. But what made me think of it is when you said swells.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can kind of bring on the note.
Right.
It's not a thumb
kind of
or
vibration,
finger.
Weird kind of feedback, too, a resonance kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's trippy.
So, really interested in those types of sounds. And so these records. So this next one, I was trying to think of what it was the soundtrack we would do. And my friend Andrea Dominic, she's a writer at LA Times, and she's also now at KCRW. And when the whole shutdown happened in March of 2020, she was observing her neighborhood of Los Feliz that, you know, things were quiet, or people were quiet, but the birds were coming alive, that the rest of nature was sort of coming alive. So she approached Aaron Farley, my partner in this thing, and myself, and she said, could we should document the city? What does LA look like now in this weird window? We thought, you know, it's only going to last a month or two. Nobody had any idea what the coronavirus would do to the world at that point. And so we sort of went out with our cameras and field recordings and started just kind of documenting the quietness.
But the first one informs the second one. It's just a different area, a little more west, right?
Yeah. And this one we thought about kind of documenting time. Like, so this record, Volume 2020, starts in January and ends in December, looking at that year of 2020 and how that sort of affected us and what my personal journey, my emotional journey of going through that year was. That's what I wanted to be able to put down in music.
I was doing 5 guests a week for 14 months. and almost 300 people on. Your music's a lifeline, man. Look, there's also a new No Age album. Let's play Fruit Bat Blunder.
The world way more than I now you can explain.
Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off brand new No Age. Wonder if it's brand new, because there were some dates on the track she gave me that seemed like it was a little while ago. Fruit Bat Blunder. And then the band before Blue Oyster Cult, I thought you'd dig this, Soft White Underbelly, with a different bass player and lead singer. Bonomo's Turkish Taffy. I think Richard Meltzer wrote the words. Electro Sessions and Demos. Epalu Tattoo with EPS after that, or EPS. I don't know. It might be an acronym. Diane Marie Klolova, Ozero, David Gerard, Darkened Slumbers, and finally, No Age. Plastic, You Want It. So tell me about this No Age album. What number is it?
Oh, geez. This is probably 7 overall. Yeah. It's our third one for Drag City, a great label.
Now, Tom Watson did Red Crayola stuff with Leo Thompson, via Missing Man guitars. Dean plays some, now he plays some synths, right? No?
No, this record we got synthy. This record. This record, the solo records is just kind of guitar stuff happening. This No Age record, we threw everything in the kitchen sink at it. We were just really having fun. This was our first record where we didn't work it inside a studio with any producers, engineers, mixers. This was just Dean and myself just kind of feeling our oats a little bit, enjoying the process of, like, it's, you know, because of the pandemic.
Well, what was the process? Train files?
No, so we, he lives out here in Studio City, so we're not too far from each other.
Yeah.
And we had the studio downtown, and our friends that owned the building kicked everyone out shortly after the lockdowns happened. So we moved into my house up here in Sunland, and so we had about 6 hours of material that started. We started downtown, and then brought it all here. And then I was kind of going through and just culling it, and we've done a lot of sampling in the past, creating loops and using ourselves as material that we could, cannibalize and take snippets of sound from things we had done and turn them into something different.
Yeah,
and that's
a lot
of what this record was made out of. It was, we took those original sessions and then built on them and rewrote.
You become your own samples.
Exactly. Yeah, I find that's the easiest way. You don't have to worry about clearance or anything.
I did a project like that, too, with a guy in England named Sam Duke called Cuz. And it was that same joke about the dog and the balls.
Yeah.
why not become your own samples? Why take them off? I mean, you might like them because they sound good, but why not become your, like you're saying, 6 hours of jams, there's going to be some diamonds in the rough, right?
Yeah. And you take, I could take 30 seconds of Dean just messing around in between songs, and they're, okay, there's the intro. There's, those 10 seconds over there, that's the verse. I'm going to flip that one around. That's going to be our little bridge, chorus, boom, repeat 3 times, and you got a 3.5 minute song. And I could write over that, like just take little drum snippets. And I've gotten fairly proficient with the Pro Tools way of, just kind of using it as a tape machine where you just lay it out and cut it all together.
Sure.
And I could play along to it. So there's some songs on the record like that.
Okay. Yeah. For example, Fruit Bat Blender. How'd that tune come apart?
Oh, man. I got to think. I got to find that. That was me playing guitar, and Dean had this kind of like oscillation sort of sound. So I said, we were looking at it, and I was showing him some of this ambient guitar stuff I was doing, and he had a little bit of, I think that was called a spunt topping, just put a little topping of something, some noise over there. So I laid that one over it, and that's sort of where that became.
Oh, you mean like a little ornament, like a... You were the Christmas tree, and he put on the...
Right. Or something, stovetop stuffing. He'll just sprinkle a little bit on top.
I'm thinking more like filler. And don't sound
right,
like filler.
Oh, yeah. What am I thinking of? Topping. Like whipped topping. There we go. Miracle
Whip. All right.
Put a little dollop on top. That's more what I was thinking of.
Accessorized, accoutrements or something.
Exactly.
Like when a lady wears... jewelry.
There you go. Baubles. Yeah, that's kind of what we added to that. I want to tell you though, Mike, too, sorry I keep going backwards in time. I know you have a timeline you're running here, but I have to officially, personally acknowledge.
You got to save for the third hour.
Okay. Give me the time.
People, September 20, 2022 edition, Bob Pedro Show. Special guest, Randy Randall. Hold tight for hour 3. September 20, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Show start off the third hour with No Age doing Tripped Out Before Scott and Tollum with Cruising the Mr. Cole. Get together what? SLW and Bob Bucko Jr. out of Iowa with Piss Out, and finally No Age with Violence. So I cut you off last hour, so continue, please.
Okay, yes, yeah. So I want to acknowledge officially, you know, you've been a huge influence on me and my musical journey, and really my outlook on music, you know, and as well as a lot of what you channel from Deep Boone, like we said, you know, punk is what you make it, start your own band. I think those messages went directly into my brain. But I first saw you at Lollapalooza on the side stage with the UFO, the Flying Saucer Attack.
No, it's band. Called the Crew of the Flying Saucer. Mike Watt and the Crew of the Flying Saucer had Nels Klein.
There it is.
Right. And I'll tell you about that gig, man. Somebody gave me sunscreen, and it dripped into my eyes. It hurt me so bad.
Yes, you signed. I think Ball Hog and Tugboat. So Ball Hog or Tugboat for me there, or was it a poster? You signed something for me, and you were complaining of it. And I remember that moment very clearly. You were wiping the eyes. You know, I bought the brown shirt. I was mesmerized. Of all that night, you know, you really stood out. Obviously.
I played that Big Blue Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
The next time I saw you, though, was at The Smell in North Hollywood. I saw, you know, looking at the LA Times calendar section in the back, it said, you know, Mike Watt playing solo, someplace called The Smell. I'd never been to The Smell, never heard of The Smell. But it was in the LA Times calendar section, you know, and I read that. You know, growing up in the Inland Empire, you had to hunt for things. I didn't know what was cool. I knew, you know, I just knew it was on the radio and MTV. And I was discovering, you know, there's more going on. And so I went to the smell for the first time to see you solo. And you had like a Hawaiian shirt, but it had like chili peppers on it. Like, not the band, but like actual peppers. and you played solo. There was no stage. You know, that's what it was up on, at Lancashire.
Yeah.
And after the gig, you were gracious enough to kind of stand out in the parking lot for a couple minutes, and there's some people jabbering at you. And I just kind of stood around and, gave some kind of teenage sort of nervousness. But you were so cool. I think it solidified. I saw it not only in words, but in action that, you know, you could do this. And I think that the message, I turned to my buddy. I was like, we could play this place. This is the smell. I think our band could work here. And it still took me a few years. And he was like, no, he was too nervous to want to do anything. So it took a few more musical projects for me to get out of the bedroom and finally play. And finally play The Smell, which was worth Pale Place, really.
I love Jim. He's a great cat. So great guy. Enlighten me about Tripped Out Before Scott. What's that mean?
Yes. So that was we have a front of house engineer, Scott Cornish, who's gone on to be a luminary in that world of touring the road dogs. But he still is gracious enough to help us out, you know, when we need help, you know, with trying to sound professional. And like I said, this record we did all ourselves, but we did ask Scott to come in and kind of give us notes. Like, is there anything in here that's going to, you know, are we doing anything terribly wrong? And he gave some kind of mixed notes on the record. And that song was, the working title was just called Tripped Out. And then, and Scott gave us some notes, and I made some changes for it. I did a mix that kind of addressed his notes and what he thought. And then Dean and I were trying to pick out the songs. We wanted the versions of the songs to go on the record, and we liked the one before. So there was the before Scott and the after Scott notes. And so this one was the before.
Some evolution.
Yeah, we went back.
I want to play Slow Motion Shadow.
Love, I'm not playing the game. Thank you. middle and regain. A moment to lose is not the war. Yeah, I shot my camera, son. I chose to wait. I feel in tune. My hair is back and I don't know what to do.
My kind of people.
You're not my kind of people.
I think that's the Buddy Rich.
That's it. Yeah,
sitting in Palm Springs, sitting on my ass in Palm Springs and not having to meet your payroll. And then it's fuck all of you. You're not my kind of people. People, you can find it on YouTube.com. It's the Buddy Rich Bus Tapes. It's very inspiring. He knew how to motivate a band. Anyway, that last music for this edition, Slow Motion Shadow from No Age. Then Sarah Davachi from her new record, Icon Studies, number 2, great guitarist out of Italy. And then Rock Kalam, Bob Moses, Damon Smith duo with Invisible Bell. And finally, Compact Flashes, No Age. Compact Flashes.
Yeah, there's some bass in there.
Yeah.
At least some lower frequency vibrations.
Flash, when I was a kid, meant to puke.
Oh.
Okay, but then, you know, Bobby Dylan had that song, Freedom Flashing, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it don't have to be puking, okay? That was just slang for its
I think Compact Flash was also a form of a data storage, the old flash cards.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think that's what Dean's talking about with that title.
No moving parts.
Yeah.
Also, it was a Dean dream.
Yeah. So yeah, Dean's the main lyricist, and he comes up with a lot of names for things. Sometimes we'll discuss them or we'll write them down, and I'll have some ideas for some names.
Does he carry a little notebook that he can draw from, or does he write on demand?
No, he stuff. I think he's got some stuff prepared. You know, when we're in the the writing mode, I think he'll start preparing some stuff and bring it in.
And so you write music to the words, or does he put those words on top of music?
No, mostly, the words come after. Mostly, yeah, we start with music, and he'll find a kind of cadence and kind of find a space for it.
And obviously the titles come after that even.
Exactly, yeah, the title's the last thing.
I always ask that question because I have to start with the title, or I have no focus. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram, No Age LA. We're on Facebook.
No,
same thing.
That was merciless.
What do you mean?
Do you guys have your own website?
Oh, the website. We don't have a website. No.
Okay. Because it's like having your own fanzine. You could staple up your flyers on those telephone poles, but to have your own website.
Well, I have one, randyrandall.com.
Okay,
I held that one down. Yeah, if you're looking for all things Randy Randall.
Okay, people, randyrandall.com. Go there.
Yeah.
It's got info on both solo albums, right?
Yep.
Probably
links videos to go with it.
And probably links to No Age. Let me ask you, where did the name No Age come from?
So it was a SST instrumental compilation.
Yeah.
that was came out, I guess, around 88, 89, maybe?
Yeah, Gone.
Yep. Yeah, I think Lee Ronaldo had a piece on there.
Yep.
And we've met Wild Man Don Lewis, who shot the cover art for that several years later. But it was a compilation that we thought was cool, you know, in the sense of that we were fans of SST.
Sure.
And the bands on that, but then we liked that this was a weirder, you know, this SST getting instrumental, kind of getting weird, a little arty, but, you know, in a way.
Do you remember a Black Flag record called The Process of Weed Now?
Oh, yeah. That was their instrumental record, right?
Right, the first one. And then I think, they had a spoken word one with Henry.
Right.
Family
right.
Man.
Right, well, it's the other side of Family Man, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's like Greg got one side and Henry got another.
Yeah. So that was pretty balls out. And Greg got it more into instrumental music. Yeah. And
I have a strange question to ask, Mike.
Greg.
With Greg, did he... I have a feeling that he wrote all these songs, you know, 84, and then sprinkled them on the records that came after. Like, almost like he had something... Like, there was a deadline he was trying to pick or something. He knew when Black Flag would be over, and he kept the band, kind of ran it in, like a machine into the ground.
Well,
and
Gone,
then knew when it was done, it was done.
Well, you know, Gone ended up...
Yeah.
You know, the last Black Flag tours, they were the opening band.
It was the double duty. He was doing opening on the thing.
Yeah, and he didn't want to deal with the politics of the local bands and stuff like that. And so you just bring your own... Same with the PA. You bring your own stuff. In fact, Dave Ratt, Sunland guy, right? Sun Valley...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, 30 semis? They started with one rented, I don't know what.
But that comes from the Dead also, right? I mean, that's what the Grateful Dead were doing. They bring the wall of sound. That wasn't.
Yeah, but it wasn't a wall of sound yet. But if you opened for Black Flag, you were going to schlep that PA in and out. That was part of the dealio. But, yeah, here's the thing. Greg would jam hours every day, almost like a John Coltrane thing. So I bet you he had licks up the yang.
Yeah, so that's where that stuff got popular. But there was those earlier kind of riffs that would get you know,
they did long
My
ass
War
tracks.
Era stuff. Yeah,
long tracks. Yeah. Probably still does that. He loves jamming.
Yeah.
He got into bass too.
Or Dale Nixon.
That's right. On My War, right?
Yeah. Do you ever play guitar, Mike?
Well, there's some minutes like History Lesson Part 2. I wrote on the guitar, but maybe 5%. Strings are too fucking little. I'll tell you one record where I did all the guitar. Well, I didn't play it on the record, but I wrote all the tunes on guitar, and that's my third opera, Hyphenated Man. And I used D. Boone's, one of his Telecasters. Because I wanted the bass to come second. And Tom Watson did such a good job of figuring out my palsy-ass shit. I can't really hold a pick, but, you know, it's interesting.
You know the chords, you know the progressions, you know where you want to go and the timing.
Yeah, but it's still hard. The strings are so fucking little. What's the next plan? You got a tour?
Yeah, we're going to leave for tour on October 11th. We're going up from Chicago, the Midwest, the East Coast. Going to come back for we're playing a festival here in L.A. on October 28th.
Now, we'll at randyrandall.com, there's info about this tour?
That's a good question. No, I think you've got to go to Drag City and find us all there. That's where they're the home for No Age on the internet.
Okay, maybe you put a link on that randyrandall.com
there we go.
That goes to that site. That invention, you know, because like I said, it's like having your own fanzine. It's been a big honor to have you aboard, Randy. When you
got, oh my God.
I know you love recording, you and Dean. So either the next solo or No Age thing come around, will you come back on the show?
I would love to, Mike. This has been a huge honor, man. Like I say, you know, I can gush on and go on and on about, you know, the influence. I want to let you personally know. I want to personally thank you. And, you know, the message you've been pumping out into the world has been received in this one musician's journey has very much been influenced and guided by your presence and just your existence. Not only your music, but just how you go about living life and touring and what you put out there, the energy you put out there is, I want to let you know, personally acknowledge, it's coming back through me. I'm giving it back to you.
Kind
so I really appreciate it.
People, it's been the September 20, 2022 edition of Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.